WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Monday, May 16th, 2016. That's right, it's 5-16-16. How about that, folks? We are so honored, like each and every weekday we are, for those that have tuned in and to make us really a part of your weekday afternoon. We really appreciate your support, ladies and gents, boys and girls. We've got a great show throughout this hour right here on WKAR AM 870. On today's show, we will chat a bit of college softball concerning the Michigan State softball team, as they did not have a great outing in the Big Ten tournament over the weekend and did not get a chance to make their NCAA tourney hopes come true. But on the contrary, the school down the road out in Ann Arbor, which has been really a powerhouse, as we highlighted last week on the show, for quite some time now, Michigan is a number two seed in the NCAA tourney. So we'll chat some softball. We'll also talk about a pretty cool acclaim for Denzel Valentine, as he, before he even steps onto an NBA court, he'll be playing with some of the best talent that the game of basketball has donned right now presently, folks. And we'll tell you how Denzel will be doing that in just a bit. Also, we'll have a blast from the past interview with an author who really just recounts one of the most memorable Detroit Tigers players of all time. You don't want to miss that chat. And also on the back end of the show, we will talk about the Detroit Tigers as they were able to snap a 5-game losing streak against the Baltimore Orioles yesterday. And of course, we'll put a bow on the show with weekend winners. If you want to be a part of today's show, you know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But hey, you know what's next. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. All right, folks, news coming out of the camp of the Michigan State men's basketball team. Tom Izzo, head coach of the squad, is reportedly going after big man Tarion Thompson, one of the best high school players in the class of 2016. Now, Thompson recently received a scholarship offer from the Spartans and reportedly has whittled his finalists to Michigan State, Syracuse, and Seton Hall. Now, the 6'9", 220-pounder from Brewster Academy in New Hampshire has taken official visits to his other two finalists, as well as to Xavier and Connecticut. Now, Thompson has one official visit remaining per NCAA rules, and it appears Michigan State could be his last stop. Thompson played for legendary coach Bobby Hurley Sr. at St. Anthony High in Jersey City, New Jersey, before heading to New Hampshire for his final year of prep schooling. Javon Bess, the former Michigan State guard, has committed to play for Akron, according to a Sunday report from CBS. He chose Akron over his other finalist, St. Louis, according to previous reports. Now, per NCAA transfer rules, of course, Bess will now have to sit out one season, then will have two seasons of eligibility remaining. Bess, a Columbus, Ohio native, spent two seasons with the Spartans before deciding to transfer shortly after last year. Denzel Valentine, the former Michigan State and Lansing Sexton star, has been chosen for the USA basketball select team. He confirmed that news on Friday at the NBA Draft Combine out in the Shy. Now, the select team scrimmages and trains against Team USA in the weeks leading up to the Olympics, held this August in Rio de Janeiro. Now, other players reportedly with select team invitations do include Detroit Pistons player Stanley Johnson and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Very cool experience for Valentine. A 3-run Iowa first inning doomed the Michigan State baseball team in the rubber match of the weekend series between Iowa on Sunday afternoon, as the Hawkeyes topped the Spartans 5-1 at Duane Banks Field. The loss drops the Spartans to 33-15 overall and 12-9 in Big Ten play as they enter the final week of the regular season. Can you believe that it's already that time of the year, folks? Michigan State will play its final non-conference game of the season tomorrow when it travels to Central Michigan to take on the Chips at 4 p.m. Despite this weekend's Big Ten tournament loss in the championship game against Minnesota, the Michigan softball team is still, yes, still a national powerhouse. The NCAA tournament softball committee wasn't bothered much, giving the Wolverines, who went 46-5, on the year, the tournament's overall number 2 seed. Impressive, folks. Michigan will host the Ann Arbor Regional at Alumni Field in the 64-team field. This will be the third time in the past 4 years that U of M has hosted a regional. The Wolverines will face Valpo. That's right, Valparaiso, who went 18-32 on the season in its first game, which takes place on Friday. The other game in Ann Arbor is Notre Dame versus Miami of Ohio. The winner of the Wolverines versus Valpo game will go on to play the winner of ND and Miami of Ohio. Good luck to Carol Hutchins and her stout squad. If you remember last year, they went all the way to the College World Series where they finished runner-up to Florida. Saturday's four opening round contests of the single elimination tournament were postponed in the softball classic at Rainy Park due to rainy conditions in the Lansing area. Yes, it was a horrible weekend weather-wise here in mid-Michigan. Folks, we even saw snow yesterday. I could not believe that we saw snow yesterday, folks. Tournament director Bob Every said the tourney will start today at Rainy Park. Opening round games are planned for 5 and 7 p.m. today and tomorrow. Eden Rapids and DeWitt will meet in the opener today, with Grand Ledge facing Mason in the second game. Tuesday's contest are Langsburg against Lakewood at 5 p.m. and Holt and Morris in the second contest. The semifinals are slated for 5 p.m. and 7 p.m. on Wednesday, and the championship game will be held on 6 p.m. on Friday. Now, Holt is the defending champion and knocked off St. John's for its first softball classic title last season. J.D. Martinez and Miguel Cabrera hit back-to-back homers off reliever Darren O'Day in the eighth inning as the Tigers avoided a four-game sweep with a 6-5 win over the Baltimore Orioles on Sunday afternoon. Cabrera's two hits moved him past another Tigers great, that being Hank Greenberg, for 12th on Detroit's all-time hits list with 1,529. Detroit returns home for a three-game series against American League Central rival Minnesota on Monday. That's right, tonight at 7.05 p.m. Eastern Time. Jordan Zimmermann, Jay Zim, opens the matchup for the Tigers against fellow right-hander Jose Berrios. And last but certainly not least, Jason Day, the world number one golfer, won the Players' Championship wire-to-wire on Sunday for his 10th PGA Tour win, claiming the $1.89 million first prize. Day's Sawgrass Stroll was his 7th victory in 17 starts, a stretch really reminiscent of Tiger Woods back in his heyday. Quote, "That's Tiger-esque. That's a Tiger kind of run," fellow Australian Adam Scott said. Now, Day became the world's number one in September of 2015 and has since swapped top spot with only American Jordan Spieth. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Our phone lines are open if you want to be a part of the show. Call in 517-355-9527. Let's start the show.
Got the worst of that exchange.
Here's the close-up.
slide they're trying to eliminate.
Yep. And I think Odor, you saw Odor dropping down. Rudnev said, nope. Whoa.
I think Bautista got all he could handle with that.
Well, Odor's now 2 for 5 today.
Wow. That's some pretty solid contact right there.
Yep.
Happy Monday, ladies and gents, boys and girls. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. I am your host, Al Martin. And hey, folks, gonna need your help throughout this hour. Feeling a bit under the weather. I thought it was just allergies too. You know, last week I felt it coming. This weather has been just up and down, topsy-turvy. 1 minute it's in the 60s and lower 70s. The next minute it's snowing. Could you believe that when we woke up yesterday, we actually saw snowflakes? It's mid-May and we saw snowflakes here in mid-Michigan. But it's really bothering me. You know, period, around this time of the year. Anytime spring hits, I have bad allergies. So I go through a phase where I'm sniffling and I got the red eyes and it's just all bad, right? But man, snow, and I actually got sick. I got sick this past weekend, guys. Yeah, Saturday, and I rarely get sick. Rarely do, but when I do, it does take me out. And on Saturday, I'm so stubborn, and I was like, you know what? Okay, I feel something coming on here. It does not feel good. I'm sniffling. I can't stop sneezing. My head hurts. I got a headache. But you know what? I'm going to go to the gym. That's right. I'm going to get up. I'm going to put on a hoodie and a Scully with some sweatpants and gym shoes, go down to my local gym and sweat this thing out, right? So I get on the treadmill and I run, 2 miles? Oh, yeah, I almost kill myself running 2 miles, all right, folks? I mean, after those 2 miles, my body said, Al, I'm throwing in the towel, dude. But I was like, no, nobody. We still got work to do, all right? So I attempted to go bench press. After that, I did some curls. After that, I worked on the triceps. After that, I decided to go and hit the ab machine. And after that, I said, okay, all right, now I'm throwing in the towel because I don't feel good right now. So I went back to the locker room, got my stuff, hopped in the car, and I said, I need medicine immediately. And I'm so cheap, guys, that I do not like paying for really anything, really. I'm always trying to find the deal. So I'm like, you know what? Whenever I get sick, I'm like, I'll just wait it out. I don't need medicine. Medicine who? What? I don't need any medicine. I really needed it that day, though, folks. So I went to the local pharmacy and just drugged up the rest of the day, and I was done. Done. I guess it worked, though, because on Sunday I woke up, and I felt a lot better. And my stepdad, he had driven up from Detroit, and he wanted to get 18 holes of golf in, and you know, no one expected it to snow, all right? And he was like, you know what? If we just layer up, we'll be fine. So that's what we did. We went out and played 18 holes, and that opened the pores as well, and I started to gradually feel better. So staying active, actually, I think worked out for me. I'm feeling better this Monday. I'm still a bit clogged up. Hopefully, I don't sound too nasally. But that's how my weekend went, all right? I hope you guys had a much better weekend than I did, all right? I want to invite right now the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance. Isaac, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. I do have to take one shot before the show starts, and that's at the East Lansing Pace Parking. I don't know what it stands for, but the parking tickets you get, they're ridiculous. I mean, I'm telling you, I drive downtown, and sure enough, I'm in a 1 hour zone and I'm there for about an hour and a half. I come back to a ticket on my windshield.
Oh, man.
I'm just saying, Al, you're from Detroit. I'm from New Orleans. In bigger cities, you don't have those ticket problems. And it actually fuels revenue, if you ask me, to the local businesses, because there are times where I'm like, I don't feel like paying for parking. I'll just go over to Lansing instead of East Lansing.
Oh, of course, right.
So,
right.
I've got to say, it just seems nonsense going backwards to me. But, hey, maybe I'm just a bad Parker. I don't know.
So you're having a sour start to your Monday then as well, man. You're not sick.
Yeah, 35
thank
tickets later. Or $35. $35.
Dude,
well, I'll
tell you what, though, man. The parking police up here do not play on Michigan State's campus. I can't, and I'm sure many students who listen to the show can attest to this. I mean, I can't count. Throughout my 4 years at Michigan State, I can't count how many tickets I accrued throughout my 4 years, dude. It was absolutely insane. I remember one time I even got my, it goes back to my point about being cheap. I'm like, you know what? I'm not paying that.
That is it for me, too.
Right. I'm like, I'm not paying that. I used to just wait months and then months, and the tickets would pile up. One time I even got my 1999 Buick Century Custom towed. I parked in a parking structure here on campus, and they towed my thing because I had way too many parking tickets. So, yeah, I was out here bad when I was a student at Michigan State. So, hey, pay that ticket right away, all right, Isaac?
I do that, yeah.
All right, well, mixed in with that montage of Taylor Swift's Bad Blood, and that's actually Isaac's favorite artist, by the way, was one of the biggest moments, biggest moments of the sporting weekend, which took place between the Toronto Blue Jays and Texas Rangers. It was one of the ugliest brawls I've ever seen on a baseball field. And the Rangers and Blue Jays certainly have a lot of bad blood between them because, you know, this is a feud that really started since Jose Bautista's bat flip. If you remember in last year's American League Division Series, Jose Bautista, you know, he cracks one, flips the bat, and it ticked off a lot of people. You know, it rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, including the Texas Rangers. All right, folks. So Bautista and Texas second baseman Rougned Odor, who is a stud in this league now, they got into a fist fight behind the bag after a hard slide by the Toronto slugger at Odor's legs in the midst of a double play in the top of the eighth inning. I really didn't see this one coming, folks. I don't think anyone saw this one coming. All right. I mean, it's the beginning of the year. You know, it's kind of a routine double play here. But man, oh man, Rougned Odor and Jose Bautista, they met at second base and it was on like Donkey Kong. Okay, and I don't know if you guys saw the footage, but it's so crazy that you heard the call of it from the announcers. When the play happens, the camera initially did not catch the very first physical, you know, moments of that altercation between Bautista and Odor. So all of a sudden you see, you know, the ball go to first, it flies over the first base bag, and then all of a sudden you hear this, you know, chaos happening in the, you know, near second base. Then the camera slowly pans to the chaos, and the bench is clear. It's craziness, right? But then as the madness and chaos ensues, it is not until about a minute into the chaos that the Fox broadcast, they decide to go to the initial altercation between Odor and Bautista at second base. And man, oh man, it was one of the cleanest punches I have ever seen in a sports brawl. I mean, Odor cleanly lands a flush punch to the face of Bautista. Isaac, did you see that punch, dude? I mean, it's been replayed 1,000 times now, but it was such a clean punch. Such a clean punch that when it happened, Bautista, that one of actually, I believe it was one of the Texas Rangers players, they actually had to hold up Bautista so that he would not try and go after Odor again because that punch just took him out. I'm surprised he got up from it. But when he got up, his legs were a bit wobbly and they had to hold him back from engaging in further altercation with Odor or any other member of the team. It was crazy, though, dude. That was a crazy moment.
Yeah, ugly brawl, but I've got to say, there's beauty in ugliness. I've got to say, that was just a nice punch, clean connect.
Oh, my clean goodness. Knock.
I don't care, sports fighter, whatever you're talking about, that's as clean and as nice of a punch as you'll see thrown. And it was good. They did have to restrain Bautista after. And you mentioned this rivalry is quite vitriolic. It goes back some time, and it's very heated. And this is just another part of it. You see guys go in hard to second at all times. It never leads to this sort of escalation. So I really actually enjoyed that little injection of life into the game. A good sports brawl, let's face it, it's not a bad thing. It makes the game a little more interesting, and Bautista got it. He really did. That's the worst I've seen since probably Andre Johnson, Cortland Finnegan. Do you remember that one?
I do. I can see where you're going with that one. But you know what I love about baseball brawls, though? And I think this article from Deadspin kind of sums it up. I forget the young man who wrote the article, but he had a great quote in it. He says, quote, baseball has the best fights because, unlike in football, punches aren't muffled by equipment. Unlike in hockey, punches are thrown in genuine anger. And unlike in basketball, punches are actually thrown. How great is that, right? And he goes on to say, and Odor was an all-timer, a true quality right hook, end quote. But that's so true. In basketball, you rarely see it anymore because everybody's buddy-buddy now. You know what I mean? Even back in the day, though, you know, with the exception of the 80s, you know, when fights would happen, it was more for, you know, they're just jarring each other, maybe a push here and there, never a clean push. Football, you got all this equipment, so it really doesn't even matter. In hockey, it's like, yeah, this is what we do. You know, this is the culture of hockey. You fight, so they fight. You know, and it may not be as genuine
as
you would like.
Less genuine, yeah.
Exactly. But in baseball, you don't have the equipment, and it's just, I don't like you. Let's get it on. I loved it. I love that quote.
I think they're spot on, too. And as a basketball fan, both you and I, that's our favorite sport. But I totally agree with that. Basketball, they try to make the punches all subtle. These little gut jabs. So your arm is moving a total distance of 6 inches maximum. It's not a punch. It's more like an extension.
Right,
In football, you mentioned, you've always got the gear on. So it just can't be intense. Although that Andre Johnson, Cortland Finnegan fight that I mentioned, the helmets got ripped off.
They
so
did.
That was pretty serious.
That was serious.
In the hockey game, it is part of what people go to watch. You'll never hear an eruption of crowd noise more so than a fight. Even for goals, the fights are what get the fans going. The players know that. They want jerseys sold. They want revenue from games. Fights are a part of the culture. Baseball, they are genuine. They are rare. And when they happen, you can really appreciate them.
I totally agree. So that's our question of the day to start today's show, folks. Throughout this hour, I want to take your calls and or comments on what do you think was the biggest sports brawl ever, okay? With the exception, because I already know where exactly people are going to go with this, all right, to bring a local feel to it, the Malice at the Palace. With the exception of the Malice at the Palace, I think we can all agree. There's a general consensus there. That was the worst one because you got fans involved, and that was just utter mayhem. That was like a WWE moment, all right? With the exception of the Malice at the Palace, what do you think is like the craziest sports brawl you have ever witnessed? Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. And again, umpires, they needed about, 10 minutes to restore order, and Blue Jays reliever Jesse Chavez hit Prince Fielder with the next pitch when the game resumed. So it was pretty ugly between the Rangers and Blue Jays over the weekend. All right, folks, I want to talk some softball now. It was a tough Big Ten tourney outing for the Michigan State softball team, Jackie Joseph and company. And it was crazy because, you know, that game took place on a Thursday. And I was watching it, and Michigan State got out to an early lead against Illinois. And this is another thing I want to throw out because I really couldn't believe this when I read it. Again, Illinois and Michigan State, they are both in the Big Ten Conference. I didn't know that Michigan State and Illinois, being in the same conference, still had not met each other. The last time they had met each other prior to the opening round of the Big Ten tourney this past weekend was 2013. 3 years. In 3 years, these two teams have not met, folks. So Michigan State, it seems like they have complete control. Christina Zalewski is having a fantastic outing, a great outing at the mound. And then the seventh inning hits, and Michigan State just really shoots itself in the foot. To put Zalewski's outing in perspective, throughout much of that game, she had allowed just 3 hits through the first 6 innings, completely dealing, folks. Then she gave up a leadoff single. That runner moved up on a sacrifice bunt. Then she gave up another single, and then another one, and then it was like, uh-oh, what in the world is going on here? Michigan State first baseman Sarah Gutnick committed her second error of the game, which allowed Jill Nicholas to score. Then second baseman Destiny Luna mishandled a grounder to bring in the winning run, and then Michigan State softball just slowly watched their season come to an abrupt end. just like that. So the big question here is, when you look at this team, because at the end of the day, it was far-fetched anyway for Michigan State to make the NCAA tourney. What they needed, the only way this team was going to get into the NCAA tourney was if they were to win the entire enchilada this past weekend and to win the Big Ten tourney championship, which was a bit unlikely, folks, even though they did ride into the postseason on a bit of a hot streak. So the big question here is whether or not this Michigan State season was a success. And I have to say, Isaac, a resounding yes. Not too long ago, we had to endure countless conversations here on the show in the offseason for this squad, having to deal with the situation between the Michigan State softball coaching staff and former athlete for the squad, Alyssa McBride. Now, if you remember, Alyssa McBride had accused Jackie Joseph and Jessica Beach Bogracus for trying to intentionally hurt her during a BP session, right? And you had all this craziness come out. It was off the field drama. Two investigations ensued. Both of those investigations came to the conclusion that Jackie Joseph was not, and her staff was not, in the wrong, and all charges were, I don't even think charges were issued at the time, but basically it went away because there was no validity to McBride's claims. So you had this offseason drama. And for many programs, that drama could have hindered what took place the following season. But Jackie Joseph did not allow that to happen with her ball club. I think it's impressive when you look at this squad, Isaac, and you put in perspective that this team was even back in the Big Ten tournament for the first time since 2014. And back in the Big Ten tournament for just the third time in the past 8 years. I think that holds a ton of weight. So they overall finished 27-28 on the year. That's one game under 500. And let's just imagine here that they won two games over the weekend in the Big Ten tournament, right? We could have been talking about the first winning season for this program. They were that close. The first winning season for this program since 2007. That would have been very impressive. And they came just two games short of that, Isaac. Also, the pitching staff ranked fourth in the Big Ten Conference, 21st nationally. I mentioned Zalewski, but also there's a lot more bodies in her that really dealt on the mound this year. And hey, they are so young. They are losing just, three players and one starter. Success? I say yes.
Yeah, this season was the third season in a row for the MSU baseball season that they increased their record, winning percentage-wise and wins total as well. So, yeah, one of the marks that Alyssa McBride notched against Jackie Joseph wasn't just, oh, she threw a ball at me. Yes, obviously, that was the main claim. But it was, this woman shouldn't have a job in the first place because her record is not good. I remember talking about that issue itself. Now that's beginning to switch, and that's beginning to change the tide, and that's important for this team because 27-28, one game away from 500. The last time they finished 500 was, I believe, five seasons ago. So that's a movement in the correct direction for this MSU baseball or softball team. You're correct in that they are very young. There's a lot of potential, especially on that pitching staff, and a few errors away from who knows how this season could have turned out. The MSU baseball team, at the end of the day, yes, they benefit the most from their youth. That's also what cost them probably in the Illinois game. But that shows that in the future, they'll mature, they'll progress, and they'll be a better and formidable squad in the future.
Yeah, and I must say, I got the chance for the first time to chat with Jackie Joseph during the ACES Day, which happened a few weeks ago. I was the host of that during that morning. And if you don't know what ACES is, it's an event held once every single year in which schools all across the entire state of Michigan, they exercise, you know, kids at schools exercise simultaneously. So during, you know, the same hour span throughout the entire state of Michigan, you have all these children exercising. It's called ACES, which stands for ACES, all children exercise simultaneously. And Jackie Joseph was one of the individuals who came out to pump the crowd up in between my hosting duties. And I got a chance to chat with Jackie, and she's got a heart of gold from what I can tell, man. I got a chance to chat with her for about 10 minutes, and we were sitting up there just joking around, and we talked about her schedule and her thoughts going into the postseason. And she was certainly a delight delight to chat with. And we were trying to get her actually for Current Sports TV for this week's taping, but she's in the midst of holding players meetings in which she meets with each player on the roster individually, and she wants to get that in before they all take off for the summer. So we'll get Jackie on very, very soon. But I'm going to announce after the first break that we've got a pretty impressive guest for this week's Current Sports TV show. So this is our first break. When we come back, we'll briefly chat about the Michigan softball team and also bring to you with the 40th anniversary, 40 years ago, Detroit Tiger rookie Mark Fidrich. He took the mound for his first start at Michigan in Trumbull. Yeah, we have an interesting chat with a man who has written a book on the life and impact that Mark Fidrich had on the game of baseball and beyond. We'll be right back. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports.
Well, he came up, he was kind of an unknown to most media and fans. You could do that back in those days. They didn't have all the internet and things to track people. But he had had a very good year in the minors the year before. But he was a non-roster pitcher in spring training in 76.
Yes, folks, that's a bit of a preview of the interview to come. Again, Doug Wilson is a fantastic author who actually... he has written a book centered on Detroit Tiger rookie Mark Fidrich. We're going to get to that in a sec. But also, you know, before we toss it, Isaac, I want to give and pay due to the Michigan softball team because they have had yet another incredible season led by 32-year head coach Carol Hutchins, who's actually the winningest softball coach in Division I history, folks. And again, she has ties right here to Mint Michigan. We had her on the show last week. She played Michigan State softball and basketball back in the 70s. But get this, Michigan, they rode a 19-game win streak all the way into the Big Ten Championship game this weekend, in which they fell, though. Yes, they lost to Minnesota, which was very shocking. That usually does not happen to the maize and blue Michigan softball team, folks. And you know, I was wondering whether or not the committee, the NCAA attorney committee, was going to look at that game and say, we don't think they deserve a number one seed now. They could not win the Big Ten tournament championship game. We'll give them another seed. And they did, I believe, take heed to that, Isaac. It actually, I think it cost them a number one seed. But again, when you talk about number one or number two seed, I think you're really grasping at straws there. I don't know. Number two, they still play, you know, a much less formidable team than if they were a number one seed. I think it would have been the same scenario. That's what I'm getting at here. Valpo, they're a good team, not a great team. Valparaiso is the team they will match up against on Friday, and the winner of that matchup will play either Notre Dame or Miami of Ohio. And also, the advantage of playing in your backyard during NCAA tourney time is really a big advantage at the end of the day. They will host the Ann Arbor Regional at Alumni Field for the third time in 4 years, which is pretty cool stuff. So Michigan, a team that was the runner-up in the College World Series last year, they got beat by Florida, if you remember. At number two, that's still good. That's still pretty good.
Well, and here's the thing. It's not the NBA playoffs. It's not the NFL. It's college softball. And just like college baseball, just like college basketball, there's a neutral setting once you get further into the tournament. So that difference between one and two is negligible since you're not going to be playing the number one seed over on their field. And that's what the big gain for Michigan is here. Of course, they don't want to go all the way down to Florida and play them in an away game where the advantage obviously swings the way of the Gators. They're not going to have to. It's a neutral site for the College World Series, and that's all that matters. This team's fantastic, and they've got as good of a chance winning it as anybody, and that doesn't matter if they're a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or seed.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree, and I think this is a team that can, again, go to a College World Series appearance. It's so remarkable what Carol Hutchinson has really – just really breeded over the years and over her time as the head coach of that program. And we had her on the show last week, and I asked her how much longer she plans on coaching. And she said, quote, "I will coach for as long as they will have me," end quote. She is a woman who loves her job and is pretty good at it. All right. Well, let's get to that feature for today's show. Now, 40 years ago, Detroit Tiger rookie Mark Fidrich took the mound for his first start at Michigan and Trumbull. Now, at the time, if you remember, back in the day, for our seasoned listeners, Gerald Ford was president. Our nation had come together for the Bicentennial Party. A little film, one of my favorites of all time, called Rocky, topped the movie box office.
Eh.
And stop it. Don't even go there, Isaac. And the Detroit Tigers are heading for a fifth place finish in the American League Eastern Division. How cool is that? The Tigers also have baseball's biggest star. Pitcher Mark Fitterich took baseball and sports world by storm back in 1976. His 19 wins brought him Rookie of the Year honors and an All-Star game appearance. Fitterich's hyperactive pitching antics captured the imagination of fans across the entire country. His tall stature and gangly strut around the infield earned him the nickname The Bird. By midseason, a Fitterich start on the mound guaranteed a packed stadium really anywhere in the league. A 2013 book by lifelong Tiger fan Doug Wilson remembers Fitterich, who passed away back in 2009. I got a chance to chat with Doug, and here is how that conversation went.
Well, he came up, he was kind of an unknown to most media and fans. You could do that back in those days. They didn't have all the internet and things to track people, but he had had a very good year in the minors the year before, but he was a non-roster pitcher in spring training in 76. He made the team. Hawk pitched him in relief a couple times to let him get his feet wet, and he didn't make his first start till about the middle of May. But when he took the mound against the Indians in Detroit, he threw a two-hitter, won the game 2-1. And the guys in the other dugouts, the guys in the press box started noticing that not only was he winning games, he was doing some pretty strange things out on the field.
We watch him, tonight, patting the mound, talking to the ball, it looks like, or talking about location. Is that what you're doing out there?
Well, when I pat the mound, I'm just keeping it so I don't, you know, get in that guy's road. I want to dig my own hole and my own landing point and all that, because I have my own thing. And then I'm just getting myself psyched, telling them, don't let up now. Just throw as high as you can, as high as you can. And if they burn you, they burn you. That's, you know, life. But I got lucked out tonight, and I had the great D behind me in the run.
I tell you, didn't
and over the next month, it just gradually built up. More people were coming out.
Now, Doug, I read that Mark was just such a popular player that opposing teams would sometimes even ask the Tigers if he would pitch on a certain day while on the road, just to attract people. I mean, certainly a cultural figure. I mean, even the first athlete to grace the cover of Rolling Stone magazine. I mean, talk about his impact culturally.
Well, like you said, after halfway through the season, almost every game he pitched, there were 40 to 50,000 fans, home and on the road. He single-handedly outdrew four other teams for the season just in his 29 starts. And yeah, the general managers knew if the Bird made an appearance in their park, that was a sellout that night. And so they wanted them to juggle the lineup. But, you know, everywhere he went, the fans were there. People were in the airport, grocery stores, hanging around his apartment. But he really loved it. He was just a guy who enjoyed connecting with people, and the fans could see that, and that's what kept making them come back.
Right, definitely. Now, Doug, what was Mark's lifestyle like away from baseball?
Well, he was pretty famously casual. He was from a real small town in Massachusetts, and after his first big game, People Magazine sent a reporter over to his apartment, and you know, they reported to the country he had sheets hanging on the windows instead of curtains. He was sleeping on a mattress on the floor, didn't have a bed, didn't have a telephone, didn't have a TV. He told the reporter, he said, yeah, I'm usually clean, but every now and then I let my dishes stack up, but they don't get too high because I only have four. And so he was happy just living a simple lifestyle. And you know, he was making the major league minimum, $16,000 a year, which is pretty unbelievable nowadays looking at the salaries. But the reporters asked him, you know, you're drawing $500,000 every game. You should be getting more money. And he told him, what do I want more money for? 2 years ago, I was making $2 an hour at a gas station. This is more than I ever had.
Wow.
And you know, he was happy with that. He didn't get an agent. He negotiated his contract by himself, and you know, he was loyal to the Tigers, and you know, fans ate that up. That was what they wanted to hear at the time.
We're talking with Doug Wilson. He is has a new book highlighting Mark Fidrich's life. Fidrich was, of course, a Detroit Tigers pitching legend back in the day. They nicknamed him the Bird. Doug's book is called The Bird, The Life and Legacy of Mark Fidrich. So, Doug, now Mark was injured. He injured his knee in 1977, an injury that he worked through, but it was when he injured his rotator cuff that really hindered his career. When he got his shoulder repaired, did he ever talk about returning back to the game?
Well, you know, one of the frustrating things was when he hurt his arm, that was before the days of MRIs and things like that, so they didn't really know he had a torn rotator cuff, and so he tried for about 5 years to come back. You know, he tried everything, all kinds of hokey diets, medicine, hypnotism, but after he had finally retired, about 2 years later, he went down to Dr. James Andrews, and by then they could do arthroscopic surgery, and they found the rotator cuff and fixed it. But by then he had been out of baseball 3 years. He was 33, and, you know, his life had moved on, and so it was too late.
So what was life for him like after baseball?
I was actually pretty good. Again, when he was a young kid on top of the world, he had always told reporters he liked trucks, he liked fiddling with engines, and he wanted to be a farmer. Of course, they thought, you know, that's just more evidence of him being a nut. But when he got out, that's exactly what he did. He had saved some of his money. He bought some nice land in the small town that he lived in, raised pigs. He got a big dump truck, and he was basically a blue-collar worker. Get up at 5 in the morning, go haul asphalt and gravel all day, come home, work the pigs. And he was happy. He loved it. He married a girl from his high school, had a daughter, and you know, and he spent a lot of time doing charity work. He was always happy to put on his Tigers hat, get out and meet people, and he never really expressed any bitterness for his injury or what happened.
Now, for you, Doug, when looking at Mark's life and putting together this book of yours, what do you think for you is the most fascinating part of his life? When you were going through the process of putting this book together?
Well, again, that whole attitude of not being bitter. You know, if you look at it one way, he missed the free agent era, and by 2 years, he would have made millions. And you know, he missed the diagnosis and being able to fix his arm by 2 to 3 years. If they had fixed it, he could have had a 15-20 year career, but. You know, he never looked back and felt bad about that. He always just told everybody he was happy for what he had and happy for what it got him. But, you know, the other surprising thing is you talk to people now, it's hard to explain the phenomena of being in a ballpark when he was there because there's nothing to compare it to.
Right.
You know, people talk about Lynn's sanity a few years ago and, you know, I just say he made Lynn's sanity look like a church bingo party. I mean, you had 50,000 people just on their feet screaming nonstop the whole game.
I've seen a lot of ball games played, and I've caught a few. I don't think I've ever seen a pitcher this keyed up in the ninth inning of a ball game or all through the ball game. You'd think this guy'd be running out of gas by an hour, starting to get down a little bit. But he is just starting to heat it up.
What's getting me is he's giving me duck bumps, and I've watched over 8,000 ball games.
The fans are cheering, "Let's go, Mark." And now, the 3-2 to Hendricks. The fans ready to explode. Here's your pitch. Ground ball should be the ball game. It's over. And the Tigers act like Hendricks has just won the seventh game of the World Series.
He has. He's won 7 in a row. He is some kind of unbelievable young Mark Fidrich.
So Mark Fidrich thanking his teammates. Look at that. He's thanking his teammates.
Every single game when he finished, they called him back out. You know, in a midseason game for a fifth-place team, they called him out for curtain calls every single game.
The fans are calling for him to come back. So Mark Fidrich, possibly the all-star pitcher with a record of 8-1, 8 complete games, stops the Yankees' winning streak at 5.
Wow.
And, you know, there's nothing to compare it to because there hasn't been anything like that since.
Even Lynn, I remember when Lynn's sanity was taken off, man. I mean, everybody was talking about Jeremy Lin. You say that made a church bingo party is what you compare it to.
You know, everybody say it was just a massive two-hour party every single time he took the mound.
21-year-old Mark Vickrich from Worcester, Mass. And here he comes! Here he comes!
Oh, this is unbelievable.
He loves him! Look at that! Shaking the policeman's hand! Look at that! This kid is terrific!
I, in my life, I've been in baseball 35 years. I have never in my life ever seen anything to equal this. The closest was when Dale Long hit a home run. Why wouldn't he cry?
He's so happy. He's look at this.
Like I said, I wish I had a time machine to go back. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Doug Wilson. He has a new book highlighting Mark Vickrich's life. Mark Vickrich, a legendary Tigers pitcher back in the late 70s. Doug has a new book out highlighting Mark's life entitled The Bird, The Life and Legacy of Mark Vickrich. So what do you think Mark's legacy is, Doug?
Again, a couple things. One is a guy who came along when baseball really needed it.
Yes, much thanks to author Doug Wilson for lending his time to talk about his book on the great Mark Vickrich. And as I just stated in the interview, man, I really wish I had a... I always bring it up. Anytime we have Throwback Thursday, I always bring up how, you know, we hop into our current sports time machine and head back in sports history. I really wish I had a time machine to go back and really witness some of the greats in sports history, specifically those that have made an impact, a profound impact on Detroit sports. So what are your thoughts on Mark Vickrich, those that really got a chance to see him play? I'm curious. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. And actually, we have a message on our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. I like to read. This one comes from Roger Hain. He says, "Hi, Al. I just heard your show about Mark Vickrich. The main thing I have to say is that it's so sad that no one from then up until now could recognize that Vickrich was autistic. He very clearly had Asperger's syndrome. It is glaringly obvious if you know what to look for and make the effort to look. Granted, no one back then thought about Asperger's syndrome or mild autism in adults. But even now, with all the publicity about it, normal brain people didn't notice. And I'm sure it didn't occur to Wilson. Normal brain people can only think in terms of weirdness, ridicule, or ostracism. It's a Darwinian thing. But having Asperger's myself, I can spot it in people instantly. Sadly, I don't think things will ever change. It's the natural Darwinian way," end quote. That's coming from our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Roger Hain weighing in there. And you know what? When I just got this message, Isaac, I went to Google and tried to Google it, but nothing came up when it comes to Mark Vickrich and autism. I don't know how accurate that assumption can be made. I don't know.
So, I mean, that's definitely something you'd have to look into, because definitely, we can't say for certain, since actually I haven't even seen a game tape of Vickrich or anything like that.
But get out of here.
No.
Oh,
I didn't grow up a Detroit sports fan.
That's your homework, Isaac. And I didn't know anything. I didn't know much about him until our station manager. It's his birthday today. It is Peter Worf's birthday, our radio station manager. His birthday
happy
today, so happy birthday.
Peter.
Peter's a big baseball maniac, and he came to me and said, "Hey, Al, you know, we should do something on Mark Vickrich." And he's the one who pitched me the idea of getting in touch with Doug Wilson. But, you know, I didn't know anything about Mark until Peter would you know, talk to me about him and how he used to, you know, get down on the mound and just do crazy things like that. Man, it's pretty interesting. So I think we would have to look into. But again, I made a simple Google. I type in Mark Vickrich autistic and I got nothing. So I think Roger may be making an evaluation from a very long standpoint that I don't know if you can make that assumption. That's a hard assumption to make. I don't know if you can make that assumption.
The guy definitely sounded a little bit quirky and eccentric considering his nickname was the Bird. That's my favorite nickname for a historical sports figure. That is great stuff.
It is good stuff, isn't it? All right, let's go to line one right now before we hit our second break. We've got Kirk from Grand Ledge on the line to talk about Mark Vickrich. Kirk, how you doing, my man?
Doing just fine, Al. Although, I have to tell you, you're making me feel a little bit old.
Stop.
I didn't think about the fact that 1976 was 40 years ago. See, I graduated from high school in 1976, and growing up in Downriver, Detroit, I was in Tiger Stadium, I think, for about five of those games that Mark Fidrich pitched. And, you know, Doug Wilson was nice, and the way he put that the Tigers were a fifth-place team in their division, to say they were a fifth-place team kind of makes it sound like they were competitive.
Mm-hmm.
That team was putrid. I mean, they were terrible. If you look at their overall record, without Fidrich, I mean, I think he won like 30% of their games or something like that. They were really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing. I've been to a lot of different sporting events and have seen lots of different things. But to see Tiger Stadium with that team as bad as it was on a typical weekday night would have 8,000 people in it, maybe, and Fidrich would pitch, and it would be 52,000, 55,000.
Oh, my goodness.
It would be standing room only. It would be the only ticket you could get was maybe in the bleachers. It was amazing, and the way that he rallied the city around and the city rallied around him was just, unbelievable.
What made him such an attractive personality, Kurt?
His quirkiness. I mean, so there were two things. One, he knew how to pitch. I mean, he really did. He didn't walk a lot of people. He had real good control. He pounded the strike zone. He kept the ball down. He knew how to pitch. And they were in every single game that he pitched in. There were a lot of games they won 2-1, 3-2, whatever. And somehow the team would rally around him. But then that quirkiness part of him, of talking to the ball and, you know, patting the mound thing was no big deal. You could see he was filling in where his football went, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever did it that way. They always did it with their foot or whatever. But the fact that he's getting on his hands and knees and filling it in with his hands, that was one thing. But then you could literally see him talking to the ball, you know. And you know, the guy about Asperger's and autism, the ritualistic and kind of stuff, I could see where he could maybe think that. I don't know about that. But anyway,
right.
And he was so approachable, you know, things like he was happy to be there. You know, he wasn't an entitled player. He was happy to be there. He was thrilled to be there. And it all rubbed off. I mean, it was so much. That team was played totally different when he pitched than when anybody else on that squad pitched. They really did.
He will certainly be remembered. Kirk, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your memories.
I got one other thing real quick.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Okay. I was glad early on when you were talking about Jason Day, when you were talking about Tiger-esque performances, that you made it clear it was Tiger Woods' performances, because as near as I can tell, Day has been 7-10 in the last 17 times he's played. The Tigers, Detroit Tigers, have been, what, 3-14 the last 17 times they've played?
Right. So, I'm glad I cleared that up, right? Tiger Woods, not the Detroit Tigers.
Yeah, that's right.
Very true. Thank you so much, Kirk. Appreciate it.
Take care, Al. Bye.
All right. Let's hit a brief second break, Isaac. And when we come back, we will put a bow on today's current sports by hitting you with weekend winners. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Just 5 minutes left in this Monday edition of CS, and we love to close out each and every Monday's Current Sports by hitting you with a segment that we entitle Weekend Winners, where we look at the weekend that was in the sporting world and beyond and bring to you who we thought had the best weekend out of everyone. Here we go.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports.
All right, it is time for Weekend Winners, and I've got three for you, Isaac, today. I want to give a big shout-out to the Toronto Raptors. Yeah, folks, they are in the Eastern Conference Finals in the NBA. Pretty impressive stuff, right? I mean, the city of Toronto must be losing its mind right now. They eliminated, of course, the Miami Heat in Game 7 semifinal action yesterday. It would have been pretty cool to see LeBron James go against his former teammate in Dwayne Wade in the Eastern Conference Finals, but I really like this Toronto Raptor team a lot, and I think this is going to be a very competitive series, more competitive than people really think. You know, the Cleveland Cavaliers, they swept the Detroit Pistons in round one. They swept the Atlanta Hawks in round two, but I really like this no-holds-barred, just let it hang loose Toronto Raptors team. But I will say that Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan, they have to play consistent basketball if they want to have a chance in this series. But congratulations to the Toronto Raptors nonetheless for even getting this far. This is great for the city of Toronto. Also, Carl Anthony Towns of the Minnesota Timberwolves has been named as the Rookie of the Year. Congratulations to him. And I want to give a big shout out to the fans of the Atlanta Falcons, folks. Get this. Atlanta Falcons fans might encounter sticker shock as they attend their first game in Mercedes-Benz Stadium next year, seeing as though the team announced today that it will offer the lowest concession prices at the major sports team level. Get this, a bottomless soda, which will come with free and unlimited refills, will cost just $2. The same cost as a bottle of water, popcorn, and a pretzel. A slice of pizza, peanuts, and fries will be just $3 each, while a cheeseburger will cost just $5. Chicken tenders, $6. Pretty cool stuff, right? Oh, Atlanta's getting spoiled this year, baby.
Wow. Okay, that actually ties into directly what I was talking about at the beginning of the show. Sometimes people will not go to games because the concessions are so expensive. They don't want to spend $30 on food, just like you don't want to spend $5 on parking to spend money elsewhere. That's brilliant. My weekend loser is the NBA for allowing jersey ads, and there finally will be one on the right shoulder of the Philadelphia 76ers, a StubHub jersey. Come on, we've got enough commercials. We've got enough corporation involvement in the game already. We don't need jersey ads.
More money for the league, though. We'll dive into that later on in the week. I like that one. And the prices will be the same for concerts and other events in the stadium for the Atlanta Falcons as well. Well, that wraps up our current sports show for today. We'll be back at it same time, same place tomorrow. Thanks so much for tuning into this edition of Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Have a great afternoon, and be easy, people.